Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 13, delivered on October 2, 2018. The title of this lecture is Interest Rates.
Today, interest rates. I'm going to make this a somewhat short lecture because I've got to make the evening class a short lecture. And I do apologize for not giving you a full class lecture. I have to make my evening class a short lecture because they decided to put the internship fair right smack on top of a 200-student required course for business majors, which is amazing to me that they would not think about that. But anyway, interest rates. First things first. Madam, I'd like to borrow money from you, and I'll give you back $100 in a year. Now, how much would you lend me now to do that in a deal like that? No. I'm going to give you back $100 in a year. So how much would you lend me now to get that? 100. You would lend me $100? Bro, I mean, do you see there's no interest? She's not charging me any interest. You know, I don't. Yes, they underpay me here, but I can't afford something. I mean, don't patronize me like that. Now, this running capitalist dog, he would lend me $97.50, and I would pay him back $100 in a year, okay? So, in other words, it would be that spread on the price that would represent the interest that he would earn. In that case, if the price that he paid for my debt instrument were $97.5, and then I was going to give him back $100 in a year, well, then, I mean, that would mean that his yield to maturity would be $2.50 is what he'd make on an investment in me of $97.50. Always have the dollar interest over the amount that you invested. And in a case like that, it would be, seriously, I want this one right here, Scientific. Okay, $2.50 divided by $97.50 is a 2.56% interest. That would be what he would be charging me. 2.56. Now, this greedy woman right here, I go to her and she says, "Oh no, fat boy. Yeah, I'm going to lend you $95, and you're going to pay me back $100 in a year." And I say, "Yeah, lady, okay, fine." And in a case like that, I'm actually paying her a $5 interest charge on a $95 investment. Now, if you work that one out, that comes out to be 5.26%. You see how as prices settle on debt, the yields go up. That is one of the most fundamental principles in all of finance. Prices and yields are inversely related. Price goes down, yield goes up. So if you want the yield on a treasury bill to go up, what you would do is drive its price down. In other words, sell it. That's what the Fed does when it wants to raise interest rates. It just starts selling treasury bills. It buys them from the U.S. Treasury, and then it hoards them, and then when it wants to raise interest rates, it just starts selling those treasury bills to banks. And it just keeps selling them. The supply of them just floods the market in open market operations. And then all, what that does is that just causes the prices of them to settle, which you're seeing happening right here. Matter of fact, let me go back and do that again. You can actually see it happening in real time. You can see what's been happening in 2018. Look at the 10-year, for example. Do you see how the Fed has slowly been driving interest rates up by selling treasury bills? It's not a perfect science because the market has its own treasury bills and all of that kind of stuff, and treasury bonds and notes, and other forces will be driving it. But notice how the Fed has been progressively selling treasury bills. Do you see how there's been this general upward trend in the interest rates as the Fed sells into the market, sells to banks, and that slowly pushes interest rates upward over time? Now look at how hard the Fed is getting really aggressive about it now. And they've been getting a lot more aggressive. See how they have been selling the 7 years, driving their prices down and their yields up. But they have really been aggressive on the 10-year, selling them to banks really hard, driving their prices down because the supply of them is increasing. And hence, the yields on them have been pushing upward. Faster, the Fed is trying to do it so that the 10-year stays above the 7-year because the Fed doesn't want the yield curve to invert. But nevertheless, it wants all interest rates to go up, so it's selling piles of Treasury debt that it bought from the U.S. Treasury, and it's selling it to banks. Now, that has another effect, too, which I'll mention. If the Fed sells Treasury bills to banks or Treasury notes to banks or bonds, the banks use their cash to buy them, which means that the banks don't have that money to lend to people. It begins to crush the credit environment, driving all interest rates upward. It takes a while. I have to do this several times before it begins to really sink in, because if that didn't make a whole lot of sense the first time, you're fine, because it takes a while to get used to that relationship of interest rates and prices of debt. But anyway, as you can see, as the price went down, the yield went up. That's a rock solid. And it's actually not true just of bonds. Anything in general, prices going down tends to indicate that the yields, your expected return, is going to go up. You buy a share, madam, of something like Google. Now, how much is Google per share right now? I should know this, at least ballpark, but I'm almost afraid to. Okay, $1,195. You ready to buy 100 shares of that? Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's not going to happen. You see, prices that are going up, or prices that are very high, tend to be indicating that there is not going to be a very good expected return. Now, a bias, if Google goes up by $10, you know, whoop-de-doo. But if you buy a stock that is a $7 stock, and it goes up by $10, that is spectacular. In fact, interestingly enough, over the week, maybe it wasn't over the weekend, Sears officially became a penny stock, which means that the expected return on it is going to have to be very high. S-H-L-D, yes. Sears. 81 cents a share. It's a penny stock. Anything below a dollar is a penny stock. Now, you understand that is stupidly, and the beta doesn't really even mean anything when you get down to that kind of a stock. But you would buy that. I mean, you could buy a round lot of that for less than $100. And you're probably going to lose that $100. Why would you do it? Can you tell me, why would you buy this stock?
Chances, maybe?
Well, take your chances. You know, I can take my chances. And I usually, last time I took my chances, I bought the manager's special at Schnucks, and the meat really wasn't very good. Come to think of it, I got really sick. But what's the upside?
High yield.
Yes, because if this stock does recover, I mean, geez, if the stock goes up by a dollar, you have made a fortune on this stock. Low price, high expected return. That same principle is driving so much of what we do in this, in business, in finance. You buy expensive if you don't want to get a high expected return. You buy cheap if you expect to get a high expected return. Okay, so you, sir, could buy, what's a premium pizza here in town, an expensive fancy pizza?
Giordano's.
Really? Those are expensive? I've never eaten there. I heard they give me the win, so I didn't get any. Okay, Giordano. Okay, there is an expensive pizza. You pay a lot of money, you get a nice experience. Okay, whoop-de-doo. But you could go to Little Caesars, and you could get a really cheap pizza. And if it is as good as the Giordano's pizza, you're going to be better off because you got the pizza cheap and got the same pleasure out of it as the Giordano's. I'm hungry this morning. I mean, that probably doesn't even make sense, that example, but whatever. You know what I mean. Look. Let me show you something here. There are so many different interest rates. When I, you know, the interest rate. Well, no, you could talk about the interest rate environment, and that usually means whether interest rates are generally low or generally high. It also can, to some extent, describe the arc of interest rates. In other words, the interest rate environment might be such that short-term rates are not too much lower than long-term rates, or it could be an interest rate environment where short-term rates are considerably lower than long-term rates. That's interest rate environment. But the idea that there is the interest rate is just nonsense. You can have interest rates on all kinds of different things. You can have the interest rate on a car loan, interest rate on a mortgage loan, interest rate on a treasury bill, interest rate on a corporate bond, interest rate on all kinds of different things. So there are all kinds of different interest rates out there. Every interest rate starts with a base rate, the real rate of return. It's hidden. We can't really see it. There are these econometric ways to peel it out, but it's kind of hidden. It is hidden. We can't see it because it is always paired with the expected inflation rate. Together, these two constitute what we call the risk-free rate. This would be the lowest interest rate you would ever actually see. Yeah. It's the expected inflation premium. Let me explain that. Glad you stopped me before I started rolling forward here. The expected inflation premium is a piece of interest rate that projects how much your purchasing power would erode from one period to the next. In other words, just lending someone $100, regardless of giving up opportunity, that money is going to erode because of expected inflation. It's going to erode. That's separate from anything else. It's just going to lose some purchasing power. Now, I want to make sure, absolutely sure, you understand that this is expected inflation. It is not actual inflation because we don't care what has actually happened. What we care about and what is going to be put into an interest rate is not what has already happened, but what is going to happen next. As a matter of fact, madam, let me do it this way. Okay, I've decided to hire you. Great student, you had an incredible professor for finance, and so work with me here. And so I decided, well, gee whiz, you're going to go to work, so I'm going to pay you really well. Full time, $100 a week, right? Yeah, $100 a week. So you work for me for a year. Now, you come up with your first annual review, and inflation for the year has been 2%. So at your review, I say, well, you've been a darn fine employee, unbelievable. You're an animal on the floor selling like a gangbuster. You're great, 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 great. Okay, so I'm going to give you a 2%. Inflation last year was 2%, so I'm going to give you a 2% raise. Well, first you're annoyed because I didn't give you any merit raise, but I did give you 2%. Okay. Now, you work for another year, and inflation this year is 4%, has been 4% over the year. So you come back for your annual review, and I say, well, you're still doing a darn fine job, and I'm going to give you a 4%. You know, inflation was 4%, so I'm going to give you 4%. You work for another year for me, and I give you your next review. Inflation has been running through that year at 6%, and so you come in, okay, I'm going to give you a 6% raise. What's wrong with what I'm doing there?
Isn't it just the same exact amount? Like, how long has that been put in? I kind of understand what you're saying.
Yeah, there is a problem. Yeah, go ahead. But yeah, you're right. You're both saying the same thing.
You're technically only getting paid like
$100
a year, correct? Because of the inflation.
Yahtzee. But it's actually even worse than that. Because you see, what I've done is I've paid you for inflation that already happened, not for the inflation that's going to happen. You see, 2% is already hit you. It hit you last year, and now I'm going to give it back to you. Afterwards, okay, you just got shot with a bullet. Okay, here's a shield at the end of the year. Yeah. Damn, what are you bitching about? I gave you a shield. You see, the problem here is that if you are making up for inflation, you are losing to inflation. And remember that financial markets have no sympathy for the past. It doesn't matter. You're going to come to me, I'm going to give you 6%. Remember, it was 2%, 4%. And it's, well, inflation last year was 6%, so I'm going to give you 6% this year. And you're going to say, now hold on there, fat boy. What do you want me to give you to adjust for inflation? Remember, it was 2%, 4%, 6%.
So for the third year?
Yes.
Wouldn't it be 12%?
You would want, well, let's not get it crazy here, woman. I just, 8%. You see, 2, 4, 6, you want it forward because it is going to, you're going to lose 8% over this year. You want that right now because if I give it to you at the end of the year, you've already lost to the 8%. You've already been reimbursed. And that's one of the problems with any kind of a reimbursement scheme. It reimburses you for what already happened. You've already lost the money to inflation. Now, if I give it back to you, you haven't won at all. And that's what banks, credit institutions, financial markets, they are going to expect inflation out here. And they're going to put it into the interest rate, not what has already happened, what is going to happen. So in other words, well, the consumer price index was went up 2.8% last year, so we're going to increase Social Security payments by 2.8%. No, that's the problem. You're giving the money that they've already lost, not what is expected to lose. That's where we have this expected inflation premium. So in other words, inflation could be low right now. But if markets think it's going to get worse, they're going to put the worse in here.
Well, we'll
make up for that. We'll fix it later. But it's always going to be what is going on down the road, not what is right underneath you. Okay, you're driving down the road, and you see a deer up there. Are you going to wait until you hit the deer? Oh, dear. Sorry, my bad. No, you're going to adjust for it now. Now, if you miss the deer, looks at, it's a car, and gets out of your way, sometimes they do. Turn off your headlights, then they don't get that deer in the headlights. And of course, then you can't see them. And that's it. Anyway, well, you missed the deer. Okay, get back on the track. That's the thing that's going on with interest rates, is that they are going to move on what forward information they have. See, this is one of the worst things in the world. And this happened in the 19... Okay, very quick scenario for you. Take you back a long time ago. Ancient history. The 1950s. Oh, it was such a time. You should have been there. It was awesome. But we had President Truman and then President Eisenhower. Both of them were old-time, one was a Democrat, one was a Republican, old-time moderates. Now, let's not go crazy with any spending, and let's keep taxes at a stable level, tax the hell out of the rich, don't tax the poor too much at all, tax the middle class at a sort of a level rate. They were both very much moderates in spending and taxing and all that. And we got to some very aggressive modern presidents. First one was Jack Kennedy. And he had a policy. He was going to do all kinds of incredible things. Among them, we were going to give a hard push back at communism. The Soviets and the Chinese were both sneaking in Southeast Asia, so we were going to get involved in a little bit of conflict there. And we were also going to spend a lot of money on a space program, on social programs, and all that kind of stuff. Well, it was all working pretty well, and then it got out of hand. Spent a lot of money, started borrowing a lot of money. And Johnson's administration, guns and butter, you understand. Guns for Vietnam, Southeast Asia, butter for, in other words, try to fight a war on poverty at home. Got kind of out of hand. And then Nixon came in, and it got a little more out of hand because OPEC, the oil-producing and exporting countries, shut down our oil, which caused an oil price shock. And so money was being printed at a faster and faster rate. That's the bottom line. We had to fund all of this stuff that was going on. Print money. It works. It's kind of in the short run. The problem is in the long run, too much money, printing money at a rate faster than the growth rate of the economy, is going to create inflation. Okay, so here's how it worked, trying to make this summary, is that we've been doing this, and this wasn't political on one side or the other. All the presidents were trying to do this. Was that you as, for example, you would, let's say, have a real interest rate and an expected inflation premium of a modest 0.5%. That might have been late 60s. Well, when you print money, the inflation rate began to nudge up a little bit. And so the way the Fed solve the problem. You print more money. Because if you print more money, the rental rate on money, the real rate, goes back down. And you maintain a stable interest rate environment. Okay, we just printed more money, so inflation goes up. Expected inflation begins to go up. And so we print lots more money to push the real rate down to keep the interest rate stable. Then we had the oil price shock in the early 70s when OPEC got sick of our policies in the Middle East and shut down the oil spigots, and prices skyrocketed. We started drifting toward a recession, so President Nixon, print money for God's sake, Fed, print money. Well, by this time, the markets were getting very sensitive to money printing. They knew it was going to happen. So interest rates, the expected inflation premium, was beginning to get really serious. There is a massive overhang of money starting to happen. The economy begins to feel the effect of an actual risk-free rate and all rates under it going up. And so we get to the point where Nixon, in his last year, he was taught, the Fed knew this was getting bad. There wasn't a whole lot more room to drive interest rates down, so they were printing money at an insanely high rate. And inflation was beginning to get noticeable. So you were getting the risk-free rate was starting to push upward hard, drifting us toward recession. The Fed was, by the time we get to Gerald Ford's administration, when President Nixon resigned and President Ford took office, the Fed was pushing as hard as it could, but there's only so far interest rates can go down, the real rate. And the expected inflation premium was beginning to reflect these years of liquidity overhang. And so you had interest rates beginning to get really serious. Yeah. Well, they're actually getting less effect from it. Because the price, you see, interest rates can't go any lower than like zero, although they theoretically, they technically can get to negative slightly. But yeah, it was just basically, you just keep printing so much money that you're trying to keep the interest rates low. In other words, it would be like you want to keep rental rates low in the university area, so you just keep building more and more and more apartments just to try to keep the supply of money or apartments very high to keep the prices low. But at the same time, the problem was that the residual effect, expected inflation, was getting to skyrocket. President Ford got very worried because you were seeing the real rate right here. Expected inflation was beginning to get really serious. You are getting strong inflation. The base interest rates, that rate that drives all other rates, was getting high. We were getting into a situation that is sometimes called stagflation. Stagflation is when the economy is beginning to get really sluggish because interest rates are high, and you've got high inflation at the same time. President Ford, bless the man's heart, he was a very good man. He was a nice man. He was a moderate Republican, really. And he tried his best to understand what was going on. He had millions, I guess it was millions of buttons printed that people were to wear. The button said, whip inflation now, W-I-N, win. In other words, he thought if people wore buttons that said whip inflation now, that would stop inflation. That's sort of like you have an angry rhinoceros coming at you, and you wear a button. Hey, rhinoceros, see? Please don't hurt me. See? It throws you up in the air a few times and makes you a decoration on its horn. No, it didn't work. Ford did not win the 1976 election. A gentleman named Jimmy Carter won. He had been a nuclear physicist. He was also, oddly enough, a peanut farmer. But he had the math background to understand what the hell was going on. But he didn't have the political courage to do something about it. By now, the Fed was pushing interest rates, just pouring money out to try to make interest rates slide down. But the markets were just all, nope. You had extraordinary inflation beginning to set into the economy. Jimmy Carter, his first approach, now he was a religious man, and he saw the problem in some way as being almost, well, let me tell you what he did. He got up, he spoke to the American people, and he said, I see this as the inflation, as the moral equivalent of war. Meow. Didn't go over well. The press just ate the poor son of a bitch alive for that one. But he did know what was going on. He did understand it. He had the math background. He had the knowledge of dynamics of markets. He knew what had to be done, and he did it in 1979. He appointed a chairman of the Federal Reserve who was a complete, and the man is still alive, too. I think he's so mean that the devil doesn't want him. As a matter of fact, his name was Paul Volcker. He appointed Volcker as the chairman of the Fed. Paul Volcker just didn't care about humanity. Paul Volcker is a very tall man, called him Tall Paul. He smoked big cigars, and he'd blow the smoke right in your face because he didn't like you. It didn't matter who you were. You could have been God, and he wouldn't have liked you. And what he did was he just simply crushed the money supply. He said, the problem isn't we printed too much money. We're just going to clear the market of that toxic waste. The markets didn't believe him. The Fed had been saying this, and presidents had been saying this. We're going to stop inflation. We're going to turn it around. By God. Oh, so when Volcker was appointed, everyone said, yeah, yeah, whatever, Paul. He crushed the money supply. Supply of money goes down. The rental rate on money goes up. The markets didn't believe it. They just kept pushing up inflation, the expected inflation. He's going to turn around and just dump money into the market. Volcker, you don't believe me? Let's do this. How do you like this real interest rate? I'll just take every excess dollar out of the market within a matter of weeks. And, of course, the market still didn't believe him. And we had interest rates going through the roof. You had interest rates on mortgages at 25%. Corporate bonds, the coupons, some of those in 1980 bonds, they just expired in 2010, the 30 years. Coupons that were 30%. I mean, those were very attractive bonds, even at the end of their days. You see, what happened was that interest rates were skyrocketing, and this was going into the 1980 presidential election. Well, guess who didn't get reelected as president in 1980? That's right, Jimmy Carter got his ass kicked by a gentleman named Ronald Reagan, who said, this is ridiculous. See what this president has done to you. He's driven these interest rates through the roof. We are in a full-blown massive recession. I will come in and I will rescue you from this idiotic peanut farmer. And so Jimmy Carter was creamed in the election, and Ronald Reagan was made president. Eventually, imagine this, sir. You think I'm joking around. I hold you by the neck. You go, oh, no, he's okay. He's a friend. You don't believe me. You don't believe me. And after a while, you start, you know, kind of blacking out and coming back, and then you black out again, and I'm still, do you believe me now? No, man, you're a friend. After a while, finally, you're about on the verge of, you know, that oxygen depletion thing where you start to see funny little starry greeny things in front of you, and you start seeing your relatives that died years and years ago. You didn't like them then, and they're all decayed now, so it's even worse. So you're disappearing. I'll give you one last chance. Do you believe me? Yes. Now. Like, oh, uh-uh. Not until you tell me who's your daddy. Volcker just held on. He just, until the market said, okay, we believe you. You see, then finally, it got to the point where the markets, the interest rates began to fall, and then Volcker could let up some. He began to let up slowly at first, giving the economy some money. And this actually began to go down even more, and the economy began to recover. Also, Reagan and Congress got heavy tax cuts passed, which helped boost the economy too. So we went in. The only problem with this was that the government was still spending money hand over fist. Even Reagan had promised, "I'm going to cut welfare. I'm going to wipe out this and that." But it never really happened. The Congress never went along with the welfare cuts, but Congress went along with the increases in military spending, because Reagan wanted to take a very aggressive stance against the Soviet Union, which actually paid off in the end. We broke their back by the 1990s. But anyway, so we still were borrowing money, so we had pretty heavy deficits. Which kept interest rates from really falling too much, because the government was borrowing. And, of course, that meant that the capital markets were having higher interest rates because of this heavy borrowing by the government. But still, we came out of it. That is exactly what is happening here. You see, once this expected inflation premium embeds, it's going to take a while to drain it out. That's why the Fed doesn't want to get inflation started. It's because once they get it started, the markets are going to expect it. And even after the Fed says, well, we're going to get inflation back down, the markets are going to be suspicious. And so even as the Fed tries to drive up the real rate to drive this down, they won't get that to go down at first very much. Right now, the markets have had years of low inflation. So the inflation expectation is still low, but it's starting to get a little bit stronger now. And this is in the context of the Fed contracting the money supply, driving the real rate up. So interest rates are going to go up, and we're going to slide into a recession. How bad? Hard to say. It could be really severe if the markets freak out. Anyway, hey, Sears is up 2 cents. Look at that. That's a classic example. See how lower price, higher expected. Look, 2% in one day on a penny stock. Now, that doesn't mean you go out and buy this, not unless you're really the kind of investor who likes to take heavy risk. But there you go. Last thing that I want to show you here. This is the base rate of everything. It's the risk-free rate. We actually cannot see this one directly. The closest we have to the risk-free rate would be the annualized yield on a very short-term government treasury bill. So in other words, you're going to have a model. You can use this model in the real world, and a lot of you will probably encounter it from time to time. There's a model that needs the number for the risk-free rate. Well, the risk-free rate itself is a theoretical thing. So, we have to have something that is close to it or approximates it. What we call a proxy, P-R-O-X-Y, a proxy for it. And I went and killed it. The one that has been popular over the years. See this one right here? This is the annualized on a 1 month treasury bill. The annualized rate is 2.13%. That is almost a pure risk-free rate. In other words, the only thing this has in it is the real rate, the supply and demand thing, and the expected inflation premium. That's all this thing has in it. And this is, again, this is a one-month instrument, but this would be what its interest rate yield would be for a year. 2.13%. That is as pure as you can get. And why is that risk-free? Because the government is going to pay you your money back. There is no real risk whatsoever. Now, your book says, yeah, there's a little residual risk. Not really. If you lend the government money, sir, I'm the government. I'm going to pay you back. I will. If I can raise taxes to get the money to pay, I can just print money to give you money, your money back. Or I can just invade a country on some lie and take everything they have and give you your money back. We're Americans. We do that, okay? Don't judge us. You'll get your money, okay? There's no risk at all. So, let me show you this, interestingly. Now, let's go back and look at 2018. Go. As you can see, do you see how that rate has been slowly pushing upward? The Fed is concerned that inflation is beginning to embed. We had a lot of fun. We printed money at a pretty good rate for years. Part of it was just to get out of that ungodly disaster in 2008. But you see how the Fed has slowly been pushing the risk-free rate upward? The problem is that this isn't all the Fed. The markets are beginning to push in a little bit more of an expected inflation premium. So in other words, the real rate right here, going clear up to here, like in 7/20/18, that real rate would definitely have been lower than the real rate here at 2.13. But the expected inflation premium here would also have been lower than it is here. So the Fed is pushing up interest rates as the markets are beginning to push up the expected inflation premium. The Fed's job now is to get that rate up and keep it up and get the markets to lay off being worried about inflation. That's all I have for you. Go home.